Welcome back, Mighty Vandals, to Tubbs at the Club, your University of Idaho affiliate on the Big Sky Podcast Network. I'm your host, Brian Marceau, joined, as always, by the man in the shadows. And he will be in the shadows until his graphic card is fixed or he has a new PC. Martin, how's it going in Moscow?
It's going good. The snow is finally melting away. It's another week on Tubbs.
It is. And look, hey, we have 68 live listeners already, and look, I know why we have 68 live listeners immediately. Look, we've been covering Idaho volleyball, and I told you guys that last week we had a heavy hitter coming in to help us out. And we're joined by 22, the former University of Idaho volleyball coach. He ran the sidelines for 22 years, 320 wins, which is only 314 more than the current guy. Debbie Buchanan. In Charlottesville, they call you Blake's mom. In Moscow, they still call you coach.
Yeah.
Hey, great to have you here. How's it going, Debbie?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, we're particularly excited. The comment section is already, of course, it's going to be active with former players. So, hey, we got Amanda Moore saying hi, coach. Haley Janicek, another Tubbs MVP from a couple of weeks ago, jumping in. So, look, there's volleyball developments from the last time we recorded. We're going to talk about those. There are other things going on in the Vandal world. Football news we're going to eventually get to, basketball news we're going to eventually get to, but hey, this is the most important story right now. So we're going to figure out how to fit the other things in. We're sticking with the volleyball news. So, hey guys, I'm going to put Coach Buchanan on the shelf for about just a couple minutes while I go through the updates, and then, hey, we're rolling. So since recording last week, but when we recorded, that was day after Athletic Director Terry Golic had met with the team for the update, which we'll address the update that Terry gave in a second. But broadly speaking, hey, athletes were not particularly stoked about the news last week. One of the questions athletes had after the update with Terry Golic was through OCRI, there was already a limited no contact order or policy between the athletes and Coach Chris Gonzalez, where the athletes didn't have to go to anything other than the actual practice. Their spring practice has started already. Some of the athletes wanted guidance on, hey, can they get a complete no contact to not have to go to practice? And what happens if the players choose to not go to practice? Because keep in mind, last week went over 10 out of 12 players on the team have asked for Chris Gonzalez to be put on administrative leave. As of today, he has not been put on administrative leave. It sounds like there's no reason to believe that's going to change anytime soon. So athletes got guidance very, very late in the game before their practice, that started on Thursday, January 18th, started their spring season. Athletes were given guidance that they can choose to miss practice as long as the investigation is going. If athletes choose to miss practice, they need to notify before practice or as soon as they can after practice to confirm that their absence was due to the investigation taking place. The university described this piece as a supportive measure. On January 18th, the spring practice officially started. Of the 12 players left on the roster, remember, one graduated, 5 have left transfer portal. That leaves 12 total players. 8 attended practice. Now, 1 missed practice because of injury. So it doesn't matter who the coach is. An athlete isn't going to play. 3 chose to sit out. So that left a total of 8 athletes attending practice, which we'll hit on the different reasons people would attend. But I would just keep in mind, guys, the fact of attending spring practice isn't them endorsing Chris Gonzalez as head coach. It's more them showing up for other reasons. The practice, but based off people we've talked to and as described in the OC register, was initially described as weird. And what I was told separately is, hey, first practice, Chris Gonzalez was much more relaxed and friendly than the athletes have become accustomed to or have reported over the last 2 years. was told, got messaging today saying, hey, the second practice was relatively similar. You're like, hey, no issue with the practice other than, hey, coach seemed like a completely different person, a little bit less so day two than day one. Practice was supervised. So just, hey, I don't think anyone thinks anything catastrophic is going to happen during practice while the investigation and supervision is going on. On January 19th, which was last Friday, Idaho President Scott Green sent staff, students, and alumni a nearly 800-word email under the subject line, Volleyball investigation is a top priority. The email detailed essentially all the same details the athletes were given in that January 16 meeting with Terry Golic and Dean of Students Blaine Eccles, where after the meeting, the athletes in the OC register by Scott Reed were described as disappointed and aggravated. As a reminder, the supports which Scott Green's email detailed were the case manager for the team to monitor practice and meet with athletes, a counselor from the Counseling and Mental Health Center available for the athletes, a potential notice from professors if athletes miss class due to investigative meetings or counseling sessions, a university ombudsman for potential future issues the athletes can use as a resource, a case manager to assist with potential referrals for additional support, the as already referenced ability to mispractice. These are my scare quotes, penalty free, because of course it's not penalty free to miss training. And of note, absolutely no reference in the email from Scott Green to 2022. So, hey, that's the kind of the evolution of what's happened since we recorded. So, hey, Coach Buchanan, gonna first throw you questions about the email, because I think after we talk about the email, that'll kind of naturally hit the other subjects. You of course read the email from Scott Green. What are your thoughts on the email?
I don't think there was anything that came out that the athletes that definitely didn't know. You know, it's the same things that they've been heard or have had heard, that they have these resources to help them. You know, I think the frustrating thing for the athletes that I've talked to is they still don't really feel heard, because it's this mass email out to everybody. Even some of the players that I think have sent in emails are getting generic responses. You know, they're not personalized at all. Where again, it just makes you feel like, you know, they're just sending out a blanket thing to everybody. And is something really happening? Are there actually any details? And sometimes you can't share that information, you know? So I think that, you know, hopefully they are investigating this to the fullest.
And you, something we can talk about, and just a reminder for listeners, a lot of times on the show, when we have inside information, we purposely do not disclose the identity of our information. That's just part of how the show works. If that's something you guys don't like, I highly encourage you to listen to the other University of Idaho show. But say that as a throat clearing real quick, because hey, just through our research and hey, just your background too, Debbie, we know athletes from the 2022 season who, look, they did all that documentation we talked about on the show back 2 years ago, attempting to get this issue resolved, turned it into Terry Golic. Nothing happened. They're essentially dismissed. We know athletes from that team have reached out in an attempt to have their voice heard, not just from administrators for the sake of administrators knowing, but very likely with the goal of being included in part of that OCRI investigation, because this is just something that is not going to go away until it's addressed. And based off Scott Green's email, I don't think it's going to be addressed. As long as the university does not acknowledge all of the things that took place in 2022 and the administrative steps that did not take place in 2022, there's going to be frustration, no matter what, from the athlete side or from the side of people like us on the show who, we're Vandals supporting Vandals. We're supporting the athletes. Until 2022 is acknowledged and the sins of 2022 are dealt with accountability-wise, I don't think it's going to be possible for anyone to be particularly happy. And hey, I just want to read one paragraph about why, I mean, this is why I had that reaction to Scott Green's email. We're not going to read the whole thing, guys. If you're a student, an alum, or an employee, you got this email. If you want a copy of it, hey, just message tubs@theclub@gmail.com. I'm fine copy and pasting our email to anyone. But hey, this is the first paragraph from Scott Green's email. There have been many questions regarding issues raised by some of the members of our Vandal volleyball team, parents, and a few alumni, and we have responded directly to those inquiries. Some have insinuated that the University of Idaho has taken no action, which is not accurate, and we wanted to take this opportunity to update our entire Vandal community on the steps taken and the process going forward. Just reading that paragraph, because you have that opening paragraph, and then he details the other stuff, which you said was not news to the athletes, and this was stuff that was not met warmly by the athletes.
It doesn't talk about 2022.
That's exact. You took the words out of my mouth. I was about to ask that. I was going to say, hey, is there any possible way to read that first paragraph and take away that, hey, 2022 is what part of the focus is? Because I haven't heard anyone say there's nothing going on for 2023. Like, that's where the investigation began. The critique of inaction is over 2022 because, again, university has a lot of money in communications. They can pay people to talk in front of a camera. Until that happens, we have the university at large, you know, alums like us, or, you know, hey, former employees too, have received no reason to believe that 2022 is being looked into. So...
Yeah, I think that's the hard thing when you look at this whole situation. The first allegations were brought forth in November, December, maybe November from parents, but December for sure from girls from that 22 season. And they had individual meetings with the AD. They had met with professors. I believe OCR was contacted, but in their meetings, they'd asked to meet as a group. They were denied to meet as a group. So they met as individuals and even offered to share their timelines of things that had been happening. And they were told, no, we don't need those. So, you know, you look at the mental, emotional, and physical abuse that was potentially happening to this group of young women in 2022 season. And with it not being taken care of, it's just a spread to that next group of recruits. And so it's become a much bigger thing that you can't put in a box now. It's, you know, it's not going to be able to be fixed lightly. So it's a much bigger issue at this point.
Yeah, 100%. And now here's the thing I want to talk about. I want to ask you about now that relates immediately to the lived experience of the athlete and in the state of the program itself.
Yeah.
So I brought up that, hey, athletes can sit out of practice, my scare quotes, penalty free. So I think that, and we've talked to athletes who both are and are not taking part in practice. And look, if you're sitting out of practice, the rationale I think is relatively straightforward. They don't want to deal with Chris Gonzalez anymore. They don't want to be seen as being okay with him as head coach of a program they love. Now, I think some of the athletes who are showing up to practice, I know for a fact they're not doing it because they're fine with Chris Gonzalez taking part. But I guess I want to ask you, what do you think what is probably some of the mental calculus taking place for these athletes who have to decide between sitting out or attending? Because again, like, you can't sit out of training. That's not literally penalty free when you're talking about your future as a Division I athlete.
I think it's hard. I think, you know, the one thing that they kind of have going for them is that it is a long season. And right now they can only do 4 hours of training. So if they know that this is a situation, they should allow for them to be some open gym situations for the teams trained together, you know, because they are on a really limited basis right now. Hopefully they can get this in check by the time they start their 20 hours, because that's when you start, you know, back as a team and really trying to work through some things. But, I mean, there's no way that these athletes in the last 2 years are only able to win 5 matches. There's no way. They're better than that. And so I think that, you know, when you look at that, until they fix the respect and the trust and being treated the right way, those numbers aren't going to go up because these kids are just going to be beat down. They're not going to respond in the way that you can ask them to respond as a coach when things get tough.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and some of the other things that I had that, you know, my research people told me was, hey, some athletes are showing up, some of the more senior athletes, because they want to be support for the underclassmen, and they want to make sure there's additional eyes, you know, on the program. Now, of course, during this time, there's supervision that had not been taking place prior. Chris Gonzalez, expect he's on his best. He will be on his best behavior. Again, he was described to me as completely different than he had been.
I knew all of this stuff was going on. I mean, come on.
Yep, exactly. Some athletes probably feel like they're in rock and a hard place of they kind of need to test in their own minds whether if Chris Gonzalez is back, whether they think they'll be able to handle next year. Because like if you're still on the roster, you miss the initial transfer window. And my understanding, we've told by coaches, is generally speaking, athletes if they're going to transfer, you want to get in early. It's too late for those athletes to enter now. There is a separate window. But if athletes choose to transfer, it's a kind of tough sell of they're in late when a lot of spots are already taken. And look, they're off of winning one season. So if you want to remain a D1 athlete, it's kind of tough to leave a team where team won one match and reliably believe you're going to have other D1 type of landing spaces. There's also some players who just want to show up because, look, you're not a D1 athlete if you don't love the sport. It takes a gigantic amount of work to be a D1 athlete and take care of all the students, the student part of being a student. And for some of these athletes, they don't want to allow Chris Gonzalez to take away something they love. So yeah, some different reasons why they're showing up. But again, like sitting out's not penalty free. It's more like I think the situation just sucks right now for essentially any athlete. And like you go first, please.
Yeah, I think it's tough. And I think in these girls' mind is they haven't been heard yet. So, and nothing's happened. They don't feel like anything has changed in how they've been talked to. So I guess the scary thing is for them is it going to change? Right. So if they choose to stay and not work out, and he's the coach, you know, are those kids gonna get penalized, right? I mean, in 2 years, there's been 19 out of 44 girls that have either been cut or told to transfer or have transferred on their own. That's an alarming number. I don't even know how your APR holds with that. Now, granted, some of those are gonna be walk-ons and they're counted a little bit different, but I mean, that's a red flag in itself. I mean, that's a large number.
Yeah. And hey, thank you for hitting on that part too, of athletes being concerned with, hey, if we get to a point where there's not the same level of supervision, that if Gonzalez is back, because until he's relieved of his duties, that's who the head coach is.
Yeah.
You're right. That's who they have coming back. Now, separate question now about the program developing, because hey, 12 players, not a complete roster. By the way, in the comments section, Jonathan Bricky is telling us, hey, a fourth player has now opted out, which takes the number of potential participants down from 8 to 7 for the next practices. How in God's name is a program that won one match supposed to build right now? As like who in the volleyball world is looking at Idaho as a potential landing spot and saying, well, thank God I can work with this guy who has not yet been relieved. I mean,
you would have to look at international, which is he's already doing that. I know, for instance, because I'm still involved in volleyball, I still do trainings and help kids with recruiting. And it is hard because I've had to tell a lot of kids not to look at the University of Idaho. Based on the situation and me kind of having an insight from my ex-players with what was going on. And, you know, I think that's a really hard thing when you look at what a great academic institution it is, such a great experience for student athletes to go to and just have that full college experience. And so I think there's going to be a lot of clubs, especially, you know, in the Pacific Northwest or in the West Coast region that are not going to want to send kids to the University of Idaho unless they have a specific relationship with the coach that they think is going to trump everything. But the problem is at this point with 19 kids that have been told to leave and or that have been cut, right, and a couple that have quit, and some of those are, kids are having a hard time mentally, you know, and the really hard thing is these kids have grown up playing club volleyball and loving the sport and having this great experience to now, some of the messages I got from players today was, I don't think I'll ever step in the gym again. And that's sad, right?
Yeah, that's astounding to me. Because look, hey, I wasn't a D1 athlete. I grew up playing basketball. I love basketball. I wasn't Blake, man. I certainly was not a D1 athlete. And I remember growing up, basketball is everything. I would have killed someone to be able to get a spot, which I know I'm not unique. Look, if you're playing at the club level, like you talked about, even in high school, hey, that's a different level of discipline and commitment than just typical students. Then you go to a university, you put in all the work, all the training, and this is what you get out of it. And like you just described, that there's people telling you, hey, they may never want to step in the gym again. No, dude, that's a catastrophe. We're gonna hit the comment section before I have a slightly different angle I want to ask you questions about. So hey, we have Kevin Ridenour saying you cannot build a program with that level of turnover. Oh yeah, correct. Hey, this is the transfer portal era, but half your roster total over 2 years. No, dude, that's you're right. That's not close to normal. Haley Janicek saying certainly not Pacific Northwest club coaches. Obviously talking about Stafford Lane to Chris Gonzalez. Kurt saying Gonzalez has pitted these girls against each other from day one. This is not a coach that can bring a team together. So for him to stay, good luck. We have Torin Crawford, just reading the title. Like Haley said last episode, this record alone is fireable offense. Then you have all the other details of abuse. No brainer. Terry should be gone too. Jennifer Dickinson, the players that are sitting out are still lifting with a strength coach and training coach and going in on their own to work with other things like plyometrics. Okay, thanks for hitting that. Thank you, Jennifer. So, hey, question I have for you, because you, in your 22 years, you worked under, would it be three different athletic directors? Okay. Yep. So a question I have is, because I look to try to not be a complete idiot talking to someone like you who has a background in coaching. I talked to some people who have backgrounds, coaching backgrounds, administration. I'm curious how your take on how this got to this level. And look, hey, as you talked about, stuff was turned in, Terry did nothing, but the people I talked to who have coaching backgrounds said it's beyond them how there wouldn't have been enough supervision in the first place back in 2022 with a new hire first year head coach to have flagged some of this stuff. So I guess a question for you in your background coaching, like, did you expect to have administrative oversight or administrative presence sometimes to practice to verify, hey, for compliance purposes, things are working the way they're supposed to?
Yeah, we would have every once in a while, we would have a compliance pop in or your sports supervisor, which the sports supervisor for volleyball has been through the AD, has been the sports supervisor. I guess my question is, you know, and this isn't anything against Terry, this is any AD, right? Any AD in this situation would be under the same scrutiny that's going on right now. And so, you know, who was the senior women's administrator? I mean, that's a big question for me is, you know, if the girls and all the feedback that I'm getting is that they knew that Terry wasn't going to back them, wasn't going to support them, and wasn't taking them seriously. Who was the senior women's administrator in 2022? Because Krista left and they didn't assign another SWA until August 11th of 2023, which is the head athletic trainer. And so for me, like when I look at a lot of these things that the athletes are putting forward, not being fed, being told that that's the budget potentially, telling them that a snack bag is sufficeable because, you know, they have an Uncrustable in there. You know, being put three girls to a room, not having consistent practice times, you know, being told 30 minutes beforehand or an hour before at 10 p.m. what time practice is going to be. These girls, you know, they can't even plan kind of their day-to-day, get treatment, do the right things. Having a consistent practice place, they're moving from three different gyms and carrying equipment. A lot of those things are Title IX, to be honest, if you look at equitable practice time, equitable practice facilities. And so I guess I don't really understand, in all of the girls that, or in the feedback that I've gotten, is the SWA hasn't really reached out to see if they need help. And the role of an SWA is to help with, you know, female athletes and gender and Title IX. And, you know, so I just really feel like, you know, these girls, there's not, they don't have the pathway to get support, I guess, you know, especially with the way that the supervision is. And so, you know, I think that there's multiple questions with why this wasn't brought forward, and why other people weren't involved and there wasn't a bigger support system for these women.
So, hey, what you just said about, hit on about senior women's administrator, is one of the things I wanted to ask you about. Can you, I know you hit some of the details of that, but what you just brought up for probably a lot of our listeners, they hear senior women's administrator or, and then the acronym SWA, they don't know what that means. So could you spend a second just, hey, explaining what that role is? And like, you hit on it for a second, but again, we got a lot of people who that might be the first time they heard it. I know when I was doing research for this episode, I had people telling me about SWA. I had to ask for clarification. So would you mind like just a little bit further explain that role?
I know that, so I was our interim SWA. I actually filled that role and volunteered in it just to gain some experience for a few years. And basically, you're part of a strategic admin team. You're part of the president's cabinet, or at least they used to do that. And you basically help with the strategic plan to look at all sports to make sure that there is equity between sports. And so when I was there, one of the exercises we did is, you know, all of the sports had the same per diem per day. So I don't know why they don't have a budget to feed their kids, you know, or to buy them protein or to let them have the right amount of food. I mean, it's unbelievable to me. One of the things was two people to a room, right? Equity across all sports.
Can I pause real quick on that, what you just said? You're talking about, hey, on road trips, it is supposed to be standard that no matter what team you're on, each team, two people in a room. As in, hey, football team, two players in a room, basketball team, men's or women's, two players in a room. That's what's supposed to happen for volleyball as well.
I mean, that is the intent of it. Now, whether, you know, that's what's happening or not, you know, I used to share a room as a head coach. Like, I shared a room with another female coach, you know, and these guys are three to a room, but the male coaches have their own rooms, you know? So I think that you have to decide as a coach how to spend your money to make your team feel like they're getting the most out of it. And the way that you do that is you feed them, you put them in nice hotels. The only time that we had a couple sketchy hotels is when I didn't have control of it and we went to a tournament and they were putting us there. And you want to get them gear, you know, and you want to make sure that they're feeling the love. And then you try to figure all the other things on the back end to try to save your money from one trip to the next trip to make it go further to be able to do certain things. And so, you know, there are ways you only get athletes to perform and to play well if they're feeling respect and the love back. And you're not going to get that to happen for girls who are feeling abused mentally, physically, emotionally, kids who are crying before they go to bed, kids who are throwing up before practice, you know, eating disorder starting, you name it, you know, full body rashes with some athletes in one instance that I know of. And so the fact that these young women are going through this, it's heartbreaking.
Okay, so I want to restate that stuff again for a ton of our listeners. And this is part of why everyone we talked to said, get Debbie Buchanan on. It's because you're going to be able to, you're going to know stuff because your background that we just don't. You're saying, hey, SWA, they have a supervisory role to make sure equity actually means equity. So you're saying one of the things that we've learned is, hey, look, Memorial Gym is where you had the overwhelming majority of your practices, correct?
It's the only place I practice unless we had to get booted out for something. Okay. Yeah. I mean, all of our stuff's there. We have a great floor. You have volumetrics in there so you can film your practice. Your players can go and look at it. I mean, it's great.
And you just brought up more stuff. Thank you. So, hey, your background is at like Mem Gym, dedicated volleyball space. I mean, it's dedicated for a reason. You practice there unless there was no choice. Mm-hmm. So we've been told is that's not what Idaho did with Chris Gonzalez. A lot of their practice was in the PE building, the PEB, if you guys, for people who attended, which look, I did intramurals in the PEB. And I remember every time I had to play in there, I wished I was in Memorial Gym because it's better facilities, but the stanchions for practice, they're housed in Memorial Gym, which meant they had to be taken from Memorial Gym to the PEB. And my understanding is Chris didn't facilitate that always with equipment. The athletes had to take care of that. Athletes who didn't have trucks to move everything. So they'd have to do things like recruit friends to help. But hey, you're saying SWA is supposed to be there to make sure, hey, like they should be aware of if there's something atypical with practice taking place. They're part of their role is to be aware of that. And if there are problems to rectify it. You referenced three places. That's Idaho practicing either in Memorial Gym, the dedicated place for volleyball, the PE building, or at times ICCU. And hey, look, you brought up volumetrics as one of the resources set up in Memorial Gym. Can you spend a couple seconds explaining to listeners, hey, like what is volumetrics and like, why is it why should it be an asset to volleyball teams?
Volumetrics is, we have all of the cameras mounted in Memorial Gym, and all you do is you schedule it before practice, it turns on and you put an ending time and the cameras shut off. And so players can log in and watch practice daily. Coaches can, you know, you can log in, you can cut some clips and you can send it to a player and put notes on there. It's the same thing that girls will go on and watch for game film. It's awesome. Everyone has their personal opinion. I didn't like to practice in the PEB because the floors are really slick. The courts were a little small, more injury prone with, the distance to the walls, and you could never put up going one court the long way. And why would we want to practice somewhere else than where we're going to play our games? I mean, that was my thing. I mean, get them comfortable at home, which our home court advantage was great. Pack the place, work to pack Mem Gym and get the girls comfortable in there. And honestly, we worked really hard to get that to where it was more of a volleyball gym. Basketball was out of it. We had the TerraFlex floors. You could do some really cool branding or turning that into kind of the environment like Bowler Gym had over at Washington State, to make it a volleyball specific arena. And, thought the same thing actually. But having the girls pack poles or drive poles from ICCU Arena back over to, you know, Mem Gym. And sometimes they said they got the call at like 10 p.m. that things had to be moved by early in the morning. It's just extra stuff you don't have to do. And for the girls to not know when they're going to practice every day, you know, how do you expect a student athlete to, you know, plan academic tutors or extra study time, group meetings, group projects, things like that when they're just so inconsistent with what their day looks like? That's not the student athlete experience.
And the Haley Janicek referenced in the comment section just a second ago, an additional thing with volumetrics. Haley saying Chris was probably having them practice in the PEB, so his behavior wasn't on camera. He wanted to close practice so he couldn't get caught. Like that was another thing that the coaches I talked to referenced about volumetrics, which one, hey, it's the training tool that you talked about where you can go over your own practice clips and it automatically uploads to a cloud. So there's no issue with the file storage. But additionally, look, coaches, we do live in an era, this isn't just athletics, this is, you know, elsewhere, where concerns about liability drive a lot of administrative decisions. Concerns about being, in theory, wrongly accused of something, not talking about Chris, I'm talking about elsewhere, are part of why people purchase things like different, you know, insurances. Mm-hmm. And if you practice in the place where the volumetrics cameras are set up, if you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, you get documented nonstop being a good coach, taking care of your responsibilities, behaving the way you know, hey, like I'm going to use you as an example. You would have, I'm assuming you would, of course, have no issue when you're a coach being videoed because you know who you are. You know what you're doing. You're not doing anything you would want to, you don't want people to see. You're happy to be on camera. So if a player incorrectly complains, you can simply tell your admin, okay, when did it happen? Go to the tape. It happened or it didn't. Just if that, look at the tape. When they're practicing in the gyms that do not have volumetrics, hey, that additional step of supervision or insurance, depending on how you're choosing to understand it, it's not there. Which, hey, certainly wish that had taken place, but also volumetrics isn't free. It sounds like a catastrophic waste of the resource to be paying for it and then not be practicing where it's used. Haley Janicek saying it much more succinctly than I did. So thank you, Haley. In addition to being a resource, volumetrics is protection for coaches too. So another issue we're talking about, but to shift back to the SWA or like the supervision angle, what you have described, Debbie, is, hey, this is SWAs are one of the steps to make sure that issues are not taking place. And if issues happen, they're addressed as quickly as possible. Safe to say that certainly didn't happen in 2022.
Yeah, I mean, we're here right now because things didn't get taken care of 2022, right? Yep. And that's the big issue. I think, you know, these kids weren't heard and no one supported them and no one actually believed them or took them seriously. And so now it's become a much bigger thing. And, you know, it's tragic. I don't think, you know, for me looking back, I mean, to see 22 years go down the toilet pretty quick is hard. Especially, you know what, did we win every championship? No, but I will tell you that we graduated kids. They had a great experience. We competed and, you know, I think they felt like they were treated right. Are they always going to like the coach? No. Are they going to like every decision I made or any coach makes? No, that's, you know, we're not there to be their best friends, but we are there to mentor them. We are there to help them become their best self by the time that they leave, you know, emotionally, academically, you know, so we did a lot of career stuff with athletes, helping them find the best career for them to go into or trying to line them up with places for them to get internships. So there's a much bigger role of the coach. And I think, you know, what does that mean? And for us, it was a family. You know, we wanted to make sure that these young women, when they left, that they felt like they could do anything. And unfortunately, that's not happening right now. And that's, you know, unfortunate. And that's not how it's supposed to be.
And great point, which lets me ask now about, hey, 2022 relating to 2023. You referenced family because, hey, like, you're of course right. Like, coaches need to win matches, but look, there's we have 122 live listeners right now, Debbie. That is our record. We don't have 122 live listeners because I'm on the show right now. That's the level of excitement that people have for you being on here. Many people in the comment section, former players, but lots of athletes. And hey, you, because you're an athlete, you probably have a coach who, you know, when you played, you can point mm-hmm. to as a mentor. And that person probably had an outsized influence on what you ended up doing. And hey, you even becoming a coach in the first place. Heard those stories. If you ever read anything about that, any accounts of athletes talking about their time playing, they will always circle back to that mentor coach and to, you know, you talk about the familial, the family atmosphere that coaches, good coaches create, which is part of why you can be a tough coach and still, of course, have loyalty years or decades after the players played for you. So the question I have for you, like, hey, 2022, I don't understand how I guess to call not just the team, but the supervision of the team. I don't know how to say there is any sort of familial attribute. If you had 2022 happen, you already hit on some of the supervision stuff that should have taken place in 2022. We then had 2023 and none of that happened. So I guess my question is, how in God's name does it happen that all the stuff, all the lack of supervision 2022 takes place, reporting happens, and there clearly wasn't additional supervision in 2023 to verify practice was okay or whatever else you're trying to verify? How does that happen?
Well, that's why we're here. I mean, I have no idea. I mean, it shouldn't happen. You know, especially with parents, I understand that, you know, all administrators don't want to hear, you know, if a parent's, you know, saying their kid needs to play more or whatever that situation is. But when you start talking about their mental health and their, you know, emotional well-being, and if they feel like they're being physically abused, now you're, I don't know, it's unbelievable, like, that you wouldn't look at those and be like, red flag, red flag. I have 12 red flags right now. I have players that want to come in. They're not being fed. They're not being treated, accurately. I mean, I can't even comprehend why nothing has been done or that it's taken this long. And maybe, you know, I mean, maybe the AD, Terry, thought that, you know, things were going to change and the coach, you know, she's believing the coach, it's her hire, that she thinks that that's where things are need to go. But at the end of the day, they've dropped the ball. And parents have voiced their concern, alumni have voiced their concerns. And even at the end of the day, it's about these young athletes. We're in a higher ed education institute where if we're not protecting these young women, then we're not doing our job, right? And, you know, even if they're not getting, you know, bruises all over their body, they're still taking abuse on a daily basis. And you start looking at some of the Title IX and gender equity stuff, especially Title IX, and things aren't happening that are should be equitable across all sports, then I think you have a bigger issue. And, you know, I just wonder, you know, how many administrators did know? How many administrators didn't step forward and protect these athletes? You know, are they in newer positions that, you know, they're being quiet? But at the end of the day, the reason that you have such a large group of alumni is they've banded together. Because, I mean, no female should go through this.
No, and I want to loop back now to, hey, the lived experience of the players. So, hey, the investigation's taking place. It's being run by Thompson Horton down in Texas.
Yeah.
Who, hey, we talked about it last week. Their background is in largely defending universities from, you know, allegations, potential issues. So just to make it clear to listeners, you know, some of the logistics, Thompson Horton, they're Texas-based. The investigation interviews with athletes have begun. But the reason I bring that up is, hey, we – talk to some athletes. Some people this week, the blocks that athletes have right now are 2-hour blocks. Now, the way that's executed, those are Zoom interviews. Thompson Horton is not coming up here from Texas to personally handle all of these interviews. They're being done over Zoom, which I bring that up because not only is practice starting, obviously if practice is starting, the actual academic year is starting. If the university is having to go over that athletes can, you know, have an absence notification to, you know, in case they're part of an investigative process, that means they're missing class. And part of the point of a university for an undergraduate, you're supposed to pick up your degree. The fact of an absence notification, that does not take care of any of the lost time with your professor, the lost work time. And I said there are 2-hour blocks. We also had an account of one athlete who spent five hours talking with attorneys from Thompson Horton. And I bring that up because I know Scott Green, the email, talked about wanting this to be fast, but, you know, still respect things like due process. And of course, no one disagrees with the need to go through this correctly. But these are Zoom interviews, some of which it seems if this had been a priority is moving quickly, there was a long break where some of the athletes could have been talked to. It's now taking place when they have a ton of stuff going on. So in addition to the stress of what's happening, in addition to practice, in addition to classes, in addition to the fact that now, like, hey, there's not 500 people on the volleyball team. People know who all these athletes are. This is very likely something athletes are trying to recount all the damn time. The investigative process is it's a meaningful time suck too. So I guess a question for you now, hey, you were, again, you coached for 22 years playing background. Like, imagine you're part of the, you're one of the athletes being interviewed right now. Like, how's your time at school?
Well, I think, I'm not sure which athlete I was reading through their stuff. And, it was from the 2023 and just saying how, you know, when they do have downtime, they stay in their rooms because they're depressed and they have anxiety and they're not out doing all of the things that girls are normally doing in the spring when we're not having practice. I mean, that's kind of the benefit sometimes of, you know, you finish the fall and the spring, you have a lot more time to yourself because you're only in 8 hours a week. I think, you know, I'm sure that these athletes are stressed. I'm sure that they're feeling the pressure right now. They're making a stand, and sometimes that's uncomfortable. They're in a college town. They're very visible between on campus and in the community, and now obviously through social media. And it's come to the point where they've had to make a stand, though, with their parents and themselves, of really coming forward and banding together and standing with fellow teammates to say that, okay, this wasn't right and we weren't heard. And, you know, it could have easily switched if the 2022 kids had gone in and let's say there, I don't know how many of them there were, 4, 8, whatever there was. And, you know, thank you for this information. We're going to look into it. We're going to keep you guys in the loop. We're sorry that you feel this way. To make them feel heard and appreciated and that, you know, we do take things seriously. And instead, no, you can't meet as a group. No, I don't want your information. You know, there's a budget to follow. So if you can't afford a meal, we do have a budget to follow. You get a snack bag. I mean, those are the responses. It's, you know, we're not protecting these athletes. And I think, again, I mean, that's the biggest issue. These athletes, I'm sure, are stressed to the max right now. Even the ones that are practicing, they're feeling the pressure. And I'm sure it's weighing on all of them. Oh, I can't hear you, Brian. You're muted.
Oh, man. Of course. Amateur hour always strikes at least once, Debbie. Okay. Yeah. So hey, we're going to hit the comment section in a second. Before that, we got to talk about something that is not the bad news we've been going over for a while. The Hughes River Expedition show sponsor. And look, here's how it works. If you have ever thought about going on any sort of rafting trips, if you want to see the Northwest in a way you haven't, like going down a rapid trip down the Middle Fork of the Salmon, the main Salmon River of No Return, or like the Salmon River Canyons, you have to get a hold of calling it Hughes River. So Hughes, the way these work, Hughes River Expedition trips are all inclusive. Truly, you just book it, show up. Colin takes care of everything else. It doesn't matter if you are a large group doing it as some sort of like team building exercise, or if you're a family who you want to have a trip that you know you're going to talk about the rest of your life. It doesn't matter. Hughes River makes it work for both situations. So what you got to do, give Colin a call, 800-262-1882, or check him out at hughesriver.com. So, okay, comment section that we need to tend to for a second. Okay, Mark Trivelpiece, our favorite corner club owner, seeing/hearing Deb's former player stand up for the current player speaks to the family she helped create. Good job, coach. Kevin Reidenauer, this should have been resolved in 2022. Terry's response, ? Is that it? We have Mark McEnany saying that's not the culture, the culture Idaho has naturally. Vandal pride is real for any student or alum. S-Sharp22 saying the AD, meaning Terry, trying to save face. That's why it didn't happen. Sweeping it under the rug time and time again. Amanda Moore, we donate to the VSF thanks to the amazing experience we had with Debbie. We want to give back, but this has us questioning if we should. Torin Helbling, can't admit, meaning Terry, she made a bad hire. Eric Stang, as an AD, you can't pick and choose what you will ignore or address in terms of what comes across your desk or brought to your attention. Tom Kendall, so many red flags. Taylor Cash, which actually we may circle back to this question. What are the real ramifications that could come down for Title IX violations? Then Haley Janicek, let's call it. Terry and Chris aren't the only ones who failed these women, which that's part of why I was asking the questions about supervision. Is it just doesn't seem possible that we have the resources we have today. We have the size of an athletic department we have in 2023, which it's not the same thing as it was in like 1960. Like, you know, when my dad was younger, these things are different. There's different levels of supervision. There are lots of people who failed the athletes, but that's why we are where we are. The supervision was not there. Due diligence on the hire itself clearly was not there. So, hey, Debbie, don't know if you can speak to Taylor's question. Based off this, like, what are potential ramifications, you know, based off Title IX clearly not having equal protections in place?
You know, I'm not really sure. I know that, you know, if parents sent something, I think I did hear that some people did reach out to the NCAA. I'm sure eventually maybe it would be looked into. I know that you do have to get certification every so many years, you know, where they would look at some things, but I'm not really sure on that. I know APR is a big thing, and I would be concerned a little bit with the APR numbers for volleyball. I think that, you know, it's hard to know what that calculation would even look like because, you know, if they're eligible in the fall and then they go into the portal, a lot of times you're not getting dinged as long as they're able to go and play. If you're a walk-on, you know, they're not being counted. So it's really hard to know what that number looks like. And that would be interesting just because I think it is a fairly large number. And I think when I was looking, there's a lot of kids that were told that they should go somewhere else to play. They weren't good enough. They weren't going to play. And, you know, they're playing at Sac State. They're playing at Wichita State. They're at Florida International. You know, the list goes on with a lot of these athletes that have opportunities to go play somewhere else. But I'm not really sure what the ramifications would be. I just know that when you start looking at, you're talking about supervisors, you know, it starts with your athletic director, right? And your sport liaison, which is an athletic director, that's one of her sports. Then you look at, you know, who's your SWA, and, you know, are those girls being introduced, or the young women being introduced to the SWA, that this is a resource for you and someone to go and talk to? What is the experience of the SWA, which is now the head trainer, and is she visible all the time, or is she working with other student athletes or other teams? You know, so I think it's hard. I think that the University of Idaho in general has dropped the ball for these athletes, and I think there should be quite a few ramifications as far as, you know, protection from your athletic director to your, obviously your volleyball coaches, even athletic training. It's hard with athletic training because volleyball has a grad assistant. You get a new GA every 2 years. And so you're trying to build that culture with them, and they're still a student themselves. And so, they may not feel comfortable like really making a stand. So there's a lot of things that you wonder. I don't know if we're ever going to know the answers. We're probably not, but why, you know, why has this happened? Why has this gone on for almost 18 months and not been addressed? And none of these athletes feel closure. None of these athletes feel heard except for the newspaper reports. Everything they're getting from the university is the generic responses of, here's a crisis team, here's who you contact for mental health issues. You know, it's kind of the same stuff Scott Green sent to all of us, right? And so, you know, I think that the bigger thing is just, why are this group of young women not being addressed as young women, young adults, to work through and remedy the situation? Instead, they're kind of kept on the outside where they feel like they don't care. And that's, I think, the biggest problem of it all.
So Hey, want to just repeat a couple things you said, because you, whether you know it or not, to our listeners, you may have just broken some news. So in addition to, we referenced earlier that 22 athletes have absolutely made attempts to reach out to OCRI to have their information be included. You just brought up, to your knowledge, someone has also moved in the reporting angle toward the NCAA, which is another angle where this story is, hey, maybe we'll get some accountability in that direction. Hey, Kurt in the comment section saying the current athletic trainer was a key supporter for the current volleyball girls. She would stick up for them many times. Hey, Kurt, thank you. They need as many people as they can, but like, part of why Debbie was taught, I believe Debbie is referencing what she did, what I'm talking about, what I've brought up, is we have people with PhDs and master's degrees. Their job is to make sure the athletic department works well and that issues are taken care of. You can't tell me, you can't look at the situation and tell me that the athletic department is an ocean of competence if this has been allowed to happen for 2 years. You can't tell me this was reported in 2022 and there was no need for additional supervision either way to verify that it happened or to make sure for a fact it doesn't happen if it did. You know, if the, well, I'm sorry, I apologize saying if it did, we know from the volume, there's no way a ton of the stuff didn't clearly take place. But to me, I think you're right, Debbie, university 100% dropped the ball on this, had advance notice in 2022, did nothing to rectify 2022 and did nothing to prevent 2023. That's not the University of Idaho. I attended from 2005 to 2010. That's certainly not the family atmosphere you referenced earlier about being present in the athletic department. So, yeah.
I mean, you don't really see this issue across the country where something's gone on for 18 months and not been addressed, you know? Yeah. And so this is, I think, a little unique, and maybe why it's being addressed the way it is because the university has to litigate in certain ways. They can't talk about certain things. But you know, regardless of the situation, it's a group of women that have been totally dismissed.
And because this topic is also as dense as it is, I got a question for you about the ad about not placing Gonzalez on admin leave. And I bring this up because, hey, when Don Verlin was fired over very, very minor allegations that materially hurt no one, other than, you know, minor NCAA rule book, like no people were harmed because of the violations against Don Verlin, he was put on administrative leave. Do you have any insight on why Chris Gonzalez isn't on administrative leave? I mean, he's having to interact with the people who are reporting. This feels like a textbook case of why, in God's name, administrative leave exists in the first place.
I don't know why it's happened unless there's some university policy or protocol in the way that something was handled that they feel like they can't from an HR standpoint. We're never going to know that answer. But, you know, so it's a situation that it is now. And these athletes are in a terrible situation for them. And, okay, if they keep Gonzalez, let's just say they keep the coach, right? Is that team going to be able to rebound enough going into next year? Probably not. Are you going to be able to recruit the athletes that you need to help that team move forward and to fill in the spaces? Probably not, because right now the reputation of the University of Idaho is that coaches are not going to send their athletes. I've been hearing it from club directors and club coaches that they're not sending their athletes to the University of Idaho until there is a change. And so, I mean, what are we talking about here? I mean, there's two things. One, it's student athlete welfare. And the other is getting the program back on track. And so neither one of these is a win-win situation because they're not doing the student athlete welfare and they're not doing anything to get the program back on track. And so when you look at that, and based on, because it's gone on for 18 months, the only thing that really, there has to be some change in leadership, and there has to be a change that I think it's the only way you can beat it. I mean, because it's gone on for so long, I think it's the only way that you can right the wrongs to, you know, to get things moving forward. And it, it does, it has to be, you know, it has to be admin. It's got to be your coaches, or it's going to take another group of young women transferring out. And then what do you do if you can't get players to actually come here? You go all foreign. I mean, because maybe that's what you do. I don't know. Look,
it worked so well last year. Haley Janicek in the comment section, again, comment section MVP Haley Janicek saying, and not just a coaching change, an administrative change, which it, you got to that point, but before Stop Debbie, which is when you were talking about leadership, this is a big deal. This is
It's bigger than just, this isn't about Terry and this isn't about Chris Gonzalez. This is about the University of Idaho and their women's volleyball program and getting it back on track and getting athletes to want to come to the University of Idaho, wanting to come and get their degree, loving their time there in a good college town, because it is an incredible experience for student athletes. And so there's a bigger picture here. It's not about one person or the other. It's about the program and the university and what it stands for. And all of the Vandal alumni out there are proud of that and they love to come back. And so I think it's a bigger issue. It's not pointing fingers at, you know, I've heard Chris Gonzalez is a great training coach. He knows what he's doing. He may not be a great head coach though, right? As far as how he's managing and leading. I mean, there's different things that you can, you know, decipher on that, but we definitely know that the athletes aren't being treated right. There's no way that the amount of stuff comes out with it not being true. And we haven't even really talked about, you know, the couple of players claiming to be pushed down or shoved during practice. I mean, that I've known coaches that are colleagues of mine that got let go because they put a hand on a shoulder and just gently pushed a player towards an area and it's on volumetrics and they got let go, you know? And so the bigger issue is just the university as a whole. It's not about pointing fingers at people. It's just the administration has failed and the people leading in those positions has failed. And it's going to have to go in another direction in order for it to survive.
So the reason I believe, like you're seeing in the comment section, people talking about what, like, hey, look, there was an article published about people, about parents and families wanting Terry fired. We've talked about that on this show. Hey, by the way, her contract expires in July, guys. Has not been renewed at this point. To me, what people are hitting at isn't just like wanting to have people fired. It's the point of, if something this bad is going to happen, it can't happen without accountability. And accountability, that's part of reparation. That is part of growth, is make mistakes. We take care of mistakes. Part of that is accountability, discipline. Hey, someone you may know, Austin Buchanan, in the comment section says, Deb's out there spitting facts. Absolutely. Sarah Sharp, Chris came and did a camp in my local high school where I used to coach. I had red flags immediately based on his interactions with high school girls, and I was only present for an hour. Okay, so there we go. Without being repetitive, to close this real quick, ton of evidence that there's issues with Chris Gonzalez. We know we're going to wait for the investigation. We hope it is the point of the investigation is identifying what wrong happened or did not happen and dealing with accountability afterward. We're hoping this isn't about the university checking off a box to say, hey, we were just barely not negligent. We know we got to wait for that. But story is important. As news for the story comes out, we're going to continue to cover it. Before we close the show, Debbie, I know, hey, before we usually do a segment we call a reversal, where anytime we have a guest on, we give them no notice to ask us questions. But Coach Buchanan, I want to not have you ask me a question. Instead, I want to give you at least a moment to talk about, look, the reason everyone wants you on here, still have 108 live viewers, is because you're a loved Vandal. You earned the love and respect you have from everyone in the comment section, people who are listening live. So I guess my no notice question for you that has nothing to do with Chris Gonzalez. Do you have a single standout, or when you think about your time at University of Idaho, mm-hmm. what are a couple either standout memories or standout years that no matter what, they're just always going to pop up, you know, to the forefront when you think about 22 years on the sidelines in Moscow?
Well, I know all the athletes are like, oh, she better pick my year, right? I think, you know, one of the things that, you know, Moscow is that family feel, and it's definitely a big part of why I stayed there and raising the two boys. And I would say that probably the biggest joy is watching all these women go out and just be incredible young women, right? They're married, they're moms, and to still stay in touch with them, I think is probably one of the best things. That's my best takeaway. So I'm not even going to pick anyone's year. I'm not going to pick like the best match or the, you know, favorite team or anything like that. I love them all. And, you know, obviously it was a great experience for me. A long time as a Vandal.
Yeah. 22 years. Yeah. That we'll call that a long time. So I get maybe different way to try to get a different answer from you, because yes, I do want to see favoritism with everyone in the comment section.
Yeah, I know. I know. Yeah. So,
hey,
and they all know, like, we have funny stories, and Haley knows this for sure. Yeah, if I know Haley, I see that, but I'm not even gonna, you know what? Just great stories with all of them. They're, you know, I grew up, God gave me boys because I dealt with girls all the time. That's what I used to always say. And, you know, I wouldn't trade it though. We had some ups and some downs, and the good and the bad, and, you know, it was just a great overall experience. So I'm not going to single out any players with any specific moments. I just, you know, we grew from everything that we did, so it was great.
Okay, then, you know, Eric Stang in the comment section makes me think of a different way. Eric brings up St. Mary's High School legend. What is it about the water in St. Mary's that has, it feels like that little town has a disproportionate number of people who are D1 head coaches or involved in
D1 athletics.
Like, hey, Jeff Choate coaching at Nevada now. Hey, like, you know, Eric said, talking about you, your background. So, okay, what is it about St. Mary's that has bred so many people who are working up the, who were either D1 coaches like you and now retired, or have been able to cut to hang on as coaches and have success?
I think, you know, we obviously, it was a different time, right? Where coaches could, you know, yell and spit in your face and push you to be mentally tough. And, you know, we didn't have all these social media things, and we were gym rats. And I think you saw that from volleyball. Sorry, I just saw Haley's comment. it was one of the all time. I just think that, you know, there were a lot of coaches that put a lot of time into us as young athletes in St. Mary's. And, you know, there wasn't any social media. No one was on cell phones. So most of us barely had TV. So, you know, we were always out on the field or in the gym and playing sports, and we had some great coaches. If you look at, you know, the coaches that we had in that small town that really did care and had success on the football field or, you know, even volleyball wise, and a lot of kids did go on to college and got scholarships, got out of that little town, and, you know, a lot of them have come back. But there are some football coaches in some big roles, and I don't know, like, it's, you know, definitely unique, and I'd like to say that, you know, it's a special little niche. So
with that, guys, head former Vandal coach Debbie Buchanan, thank you. You hung out with us for more than an hour.
Yeah.
So, hey, to put a close on this, guys, hey, something we just have to address on Tubbs, because there is other sports news we're eventually going to get to. We're going to cover volleyball as there's updates. It was always important for us for this to not just be a one-off, but to see it through. So we're going to continue to cover this as we have updates for it. There is football news we have to get to, of new coaches, new recruits. There's basketball teams we have to talk about too. In short, Tubbs is probably going to have to just record additional stuff. Typically during the season, we do one episode. We have been handling the winter sports right now with subtraction because of how important volleyball is, but we're going to have to tackle this pretty soon with addition by just having separate episodes that purposely cover the other sports that we can't get to because we're not going to let this one go. So if you guys are curious, hey, when does football news, when we talk basketball happen? We're just going to schedule it separately. We might start to have for a little bit more than one episode a week. We don't have a better way to go about it right now. So that's it. Otherwise, but hey, keep in mind, guys, if you support the show, patreon.com/tubsattheclub, you can join for as little as $2.50 a month. That's less than a cup of coffee. You're always welcome to donate more than a cup of coffee, but hey, that's the baseline to get in. And if you look, if you've done that, you already knew who all the new coaches were going to be based off the announcement today from the athletic department. So, hey, that discussion still takes place on our Discord, the best place online to talk Vandal sports, patreon.com/tubsattheclub. But with that, we're going to kick it to the best band in all the land to play us out. Debbie, thanks for your time. We cannot thank you enough. The comment section cannot thank you enough. I'm droning on and on, and we still are over 100 live listeners, a record for the show. So thanks for making us look good with that.
I want to thank you for putting women's volleyball out there, you know, and making sure that these messages are heard and these women are heard. So thank you for that. That's a, I think, a huge honor for these women.
And so, that said, we're going to close the show. See you guys next time. Go Vandals.
Thanks.